my next guests look for blue skies because their act somewhat requires it. Joining me in the studio now is Steve Oliver and Suzanne Asbury Oliver.
Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning.
And they fly the Oregon Arrow Skydancer.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about the aircraft that you fly.
Started life as a Canadian-built de Havilland Chipmunk. It was a trainer for the RCAF. I bought it in 1986. Took 2 years, 3,000 man-hours to convert from what it originally was to the Skydancer. This is its 18th season on the airshow circuit. I do an aerobatic routine in the airplane. Suzanne, who will tell you about it, does skywriting in the airplane. Two totally separate things.
And talk a little bit about your beginning in aerobatics and flying.
This is my 41st year since I know I don't look near that old.
Oh, you're a handsome devil.
No, thank you. 41st year since I flew my first air show. We've had this airplane on the air show circuit, like I say, 18 years. This will be, I think, the fourth time we've flown at Oshkosh. I was attending Oshkosh when it was not even Oshkosh. It was Rockford.
Where I'm based now, yes.
Is it? Okay. And always have a wonderful time. And now our title sponsor, starting this year, 2006, is Oregon Arrow. A wonderful company, over 500 products, a lot of military stuff. Well known to the aviation industry because they started making the soft tops, the ear seals, and the little fur things that go on David Clark headsets. Makes everything comfortable. Now they're over.
Perfect for my scalp.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah.
We'll bring you some and you can try them. You'll like them.
I would love it.
Okay. And shock blockers for your shoes makes you happy.
For all that walking this week, you gotta stop by their booth first and get your shock blockers, and then you can pound the pavement all week.
Yeah, you'll be just fine. You'll have a smile on your face, no doubt.
Absolutely. Happy
and,
to be.
Suzanne, you do the sky writing.
Yep.
And I'll have plenty of questions for you, okay. But tell me a little bit how you got involved in flying.
Well, I started flying when I was 14 years old. I started flying sailplanes with my dad out in Oregon, and then decided to get into aviation as a career when I was in high school. I made that decision, and so by the time I was 18 years old, I was a flight instructor and teaching people how to fly, and had been doing that for a couple of years when Pepsi-Cola ran an ad looking for somebody to fly their Skyrider, and I was ready to do something different and thought that was definitely different. So I started flying around in a 1929 Travelair biplane doing skywriting all over the country, and I was real lucky because the man that hired me was 72 years old, and he taught me how to do the skywriting. It's one of those things that there's no book written on it, there's no school you can go to. It's been passed on from skywriter to skywriter, and there's lots of little secrets to it and tricks, and so that's kind of the way it has to happen. And that was in 1981, so I've been doing it a long time.
And I was just, she didn't tell you this, but that airplane was retired in 2000 and now hangs from the ceiling of the National Air and Space Museum's Stephen F. Udvar-Hazy at Dulles Airport.
So yes.
Runs hanging in good company.
I'd say that's very good company. It's a wonderful facility, and of course, certainly to be hanging at a National Air and Space Museum facility is quite an honor.
Yeah, and what's kind of neat about it is, well, just such an honor, like you say, and it's a beautiful airplane, and they put it in the very highest spot of the museum, which is where it spent its life, you know, way up over 10,000 feet doing skywriting, because it was a skywriter all its life, and they put it there just exactly like I last flew the airplane, which means, you know, my headset's in there, my cushions are in there, my Oregon Arrow cushions are in there. And it was funny because I wanted to get my cushions out because, you know, they had sentimental value. I've been sitting on them all this time. And Oregon Arrow had built me a special cushion for that airplane. And I didn't, because they just wanted it left the way it was. And later, Mike Dennis, that owns Oregon Arrow, goes, I am so glad you didn't take that cushion out of there. It's a compliment, but I'm glad it's still in that airplane.
You are the world's only husband and wife professional aerobatic and skywriting duo, and you've been doing it since 1980.
Correct. Actually, Suze has seniority. She hired on in 1980 and started doing it. We met at the Kentucky Derby where she was skywriting and I was towing banners. And the rest, as they say, is history. We were married 11 months later, and I joined her, and we became the Pepsi Aerial Entertainers at that point in time. And that ran from 81 through last year when the program was finally retired. After 27 years, we were the longest sponsored act in the air show history. Mm-hmm. I mean, every 27 years. And then, you know, we had the wonderful fortune of having Oregon Arrow, who had been friends of ours and supporters of us since the beginning. In fact, I was the first pilot that Oregon Arrow product supported, starting in 1990. Their company started in 1989. And they're a small company from Oregon that are well known for a couple of their things, like the soft tops and the soft seals for the ears. people don't know that they're making the helmet liners for the soldiers in Iraq, and they're making the seats, the ejection seat cushions and stuff for the F-22 Raptor, as an example, and almost all of the other military airplanes. They've never been able to put seat cushions in ejection seats before because it would allow the ejection seat to accelerate through the cushion and then hit you and break your back, literally. So talk to any fighter pilot and they'll say the most miserable thing is just sitting on it. And Mike, who has always been on the cutting edge working with space age technology and cushions and, you know, materials and stuff like that, has been able to develop these seats. So now the fighter pilots love him because, you know, their helmets are comfortable because he's been doing helmet liners forever. And now they're sitting on cushions for the first time ever. And, I mean, literally, it sounds like commercial, but it's literally the truth. And then they get out, and anybody that's been in the military knows that combat boots are incredibly uncomfortable. And suddenly they become comfortable. So, and like I say, over 500 products. And it's everything is for painless comfort, safety.
And all that, you know, development transfers into the general aviation market, you know. So the all that research and development, now you can equate down into your personal airplane, your Cub or whatever. You can have your seats made.
The new Cirruses, as an example, have this incredible part, what they call a Part 23 seat that's built to collapse in a case of an incident or something like that. Or the Columbia, I'm sorry. It's, you know, it works both ways. They develop things for the civilian world that goes into the military and for the military world that comes into the civilian world.
Talk a little bit about your particular aerobatic act and some of the things we're going to be seeing this week.
Okay. What I really, really like about the Chipmunk is that it's a large airplane, so it shows really well. Yet it's very, very maneuverable, and it works a very small box, very tight box in front of the crowd. Seldom go out, even on short runways. I seldom go to the end of the runways on either side. It doesn't do the tumbling maneuvers and everything like the modern-day extras and all these caps and everything, which I'm kind of thankful for because that means I don't have to do it. But I like to call it the old Barnum and Bailey barnstorming type of aerobatics, loops and rolls and vertical rolls and avalanches and snap rolls and a lot of smoke, incredible smoke system on it. So it really has a great presence in front of you. And I think generally, unless the crowd's lying to me when I'm doing autographs, they really like it. It's a lot different, like I say, than modern-day stuff. But we also do it. We have a completely canned music and storyline that goes along with it. I also do night shows with pyro on the airplanes. Gene Soucy and I recreated that in 1989. We were the first people to do it. It hadn't been done since Arch Ole had stopped flying. And we won't be doing that here, but it's also pretty spectacular because everybody likes fireworks, and when you put them on the Skydancer and then do it at night and watch the fireworks come off the airplane, it lends a whole new dimension to it. And I'll be flying Tuesday and Thursday.
Suzanne, I'm very curious. Skywriting, how do you keep it between the lines, so to speak?
Well, the size, well, nowadays everybody wants to know what kind of GPS program I have, you know, but I'm doing it the same way they did it back in the 20s. It's all seat of the pants flying. I'm not using, I can't even use a stopwatch or a compass or anything because it's all happens too fast, basically. So I'm counting for size. 1001, 1002, 1003, to get all the straight legs the same size. And then just using different reference points on the windscreen, I use different screws in the windscreen to lay on the horizon depending on the type of turn I want to make, like a big loop for an O or a tighter loop for a P, you know, or the top of an R, that kind of thing. And then the hardest part really is when the smoke is off, getting set back up for your next leg or of the next letter, because what you want is to be perfectly even, and you don't want to run over your last letter, and you don't want to be too far away from your last letter. You want the spacing to be right, you want it to be neat. And I'm at the same altitude as everybody, I mean as all my letters, so I can't see it. So that's another challenge to add to it. I can't tell by looking, you know, where that letter is that I'm referencing off of. I just have to know what kind of turn to make that's worked in the past to get set up back again. And also, I'm writing the mirror image of what my audience is seeing because I'm on top of the word and my audience is on the ground underneath the word. So before I go and I write something I haven't written before or haven't written in a long time, I'll sketch it out on a piece of paper and fly through it and then flip the paper over, and that gives me a mirror image. And then I trace my pattern of what I think I'm going to fly, And I may do that two or three times until I get the right, what I think is the right flow through the word, because you want to get through it as quick as you can, because the letters may only last 10 minutes or something.
I was just saying, what is the time limit that you have? How long does it sustain up there? Does it have a lot to do with upper level winds?
Everybody thinks it has to do with winds, but that's really not the case. What I need to do is get in smooth air. And so if I can get up out of the turbulence and the wind may be blowing 25 to 50 knots up there, but if it's smooth, it'll hang together. And it's actually good to have some wind, because then the word will travel and more people will see it. But I actually set a record up here back in the mid-'80s. Yeah. I wrote a sign up over Appleton and came back here, landed, put the airplane in the hangar, came back out of the hangar, and here comes my Pepsi floating over the airport. And we're like, Cisa's like, "What? When did you write that?" You know, and I calculated how long it took me to get back and everything. And then we watched it, and it just kept trucking south over towards Fond du Lac.
And it held together.
And we saw it for an hour and 45 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, but that was real unusual. Normally, I say about 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes in an average day, you can still read the first letter that I wrote. So it takes me about 10 minutes, like, to write Oregonero, or maybe actually more, 15. So by the time I get done with that long a thing, it's, the first letter's kind of starting to go, usually.
So you propose to Steve in the air then?
Marry me, Steve.
Yeah, no.
I don't think so.
Have you had to do any proposals or happy anniversary or things like that?
Yeah, we've done, I think, probably about a half a dozen marriage proposals. And as far as we know, at least they said yes. We don't know if they're still married. We haven't tracked them. But
actually, Suzanne taught me to skywrite, and the first time I ever skywrote was over the Daytona 500 on Valentine's Day. We were married on the 20th, 4 days later. And she had taught me what we call the dance, like she explained it. And I could tell her on the ground how to do it. I'm going to go so many seconds here. I'm going to make this kind of turn. So I could tell her, she knew that I knew how to do it. So then the other next consideration is you have to be very, very precise. And my flying, that's just the way I fly, is precise. So the first sign I ever wrote was over the Daytona 500, Pepsi. But then I didn't tell her about it. I put a heart in the sky. Well, she's down on the ground, and suddenly I'm starting to do this maneuver that she hadn't taught me. And she's going, "Oh, my God, he's all messed up. What's he doing?" And then the heart came out, and it's like, oh, so she's loved me ever since.
Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And we're glad to have you here, and we're looking forward to seeing you in the air show.
All right.
Great.
Steve Oliver and Suzanne Asbury Oliver, they fly the Oregon Aero Sky Dancer. They're the world's only husband and wife professional aerobatics skywriting duo, 1999 recipients of the International Council of Air Shows Sword of Excellence Award. And we thank you very much. You're listening to EAA Radio.